sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. Welcome aboard the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's Andrew Horowitz, and we are talking about technical analysis charting. And we're going to really get into it today with my guest, Brian Shannon from alphatrends.net, a wonderful, wonderful technical analyst, and you really can pick a trend. And right now, with the markets being as undulating and undecided for direction, clearly in a downtrend, but still undecided what's going on in the near term, I am going to try to figure out if we can get an edge here. That's what we're going to look for. I wanted to mention, we're going to get right into this because I really want to spend some time with him, but I want to mention a couple of different things. First of all, if you haven't checked out the Strategy Lab, MSN Strategy Lab, as of this recording, as of the day of this recording, I'm about 18% since August 1st, and that is, I think, pretty good when you consider that the market's down about 30%. The Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which is an individual portfolio that we run for you, is up about 5.7% for the month of November, which compares well to about an 8% drop, approximately 8% drop in the S&P. If you're interested in checking that out, now's really the time before we get the next wave of what's about to happen, either up or down. We're going to see probably a little bit of a near term. Maybe hiatus from the tremendous volatility, but I do believe that when we see a lot of these numbers coming out, it's going to return and we're going to see a lot of variation. So if you want to get in on that and check it out, of course, it's over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and there's a little area where you can just check off and listen to about a 14-minute discussion, an audio-visual tour about the strategy. And so many of you have taken part in that. Thank you so much for your emails. I'm glad we're making some money for everybody. Make sure to manage your hedges right now and manage your short positions as well as your longs in a neutrally divided portfolio where you don't have too much exposure right now, because I'm still very concerned about many of the economic numbers that will come out post any bailout or barring any bailout. Boy, it's been a week of bailouts. And then the other thing I'll mention to you is, if you haven't done so, go over to Twit. I was on Twit this week and also had another podcast with John C. Dvorak. I'll put some links on the website for that. But right now, you definitely want to track that and my Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. Enough of plugging, because I just want to make sure you're getting all the news and making sure you're profiting as best as possible. So we're going to get back in a moment, and we're going to get right on the horn with Brian Shannon, figure out what's going on in the world of charting. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Grammar Girl from QuickAndDirtyTips.com, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Now, welcome back. This is Andrew Horowitz, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And, you know, it is probably long overdue that we have a good friend of mine, Brian Shannon from alphatrends.net, because the maestro of technical analysis, the maestro of reading these markets like it's a tea leaf, kind of makes child's play in a way out of what's going on. For the rest of us, oftentimes, it looks like just a bunch of crazy movement with a crazy rationale. But my friend Brian here can hopefully shed some light on what's going on. And by the way, Brian, I think I told you this before, but I keep on, you know, especially in this environment, finding myself going back and referencing your book to see if I can find, you know, any kind of indication in this technical analysis or something that matches and makes sense. So it's, you know, by the way, it's called Technical Analysis Using Multiple Timeframes. So that's been, I think your timing on the putting out the book is great, Brian.
Well, you know, a lot of people have been searching for answers in all this volatility. And by the way, thanks for having me on again. Good to be talking to you.
Thanks.
But the volatility has just been enormous this year. And when there's such big volatility, it represents an emotional market. And the best way to read that is, unfortunately, not through fundamentals, but through measuring what people are actually doing with their money and looking at the only true objective measure there is, which is price action.
Yeah, but the thing is, and that's a great point, because I've been scratching my head, and this happens from time to time, you know, where you're I find myself a little bit dumbfounded. You know, you find a piece of fundamental reports that come out and talking about earnings, or we see maybe an economic report that looks just absolutely abysmal. We see maybe a bailout or two from time to time, the thing is, I agree with you that the price action is important, but I don't think that, and I'll go on a limb here, have you ever seen price action this absolutely insane?
I don't think anyone alive has, and I don't think we're going to see it again in our lifetimes. It's truly amazing, and I feel privileged to be a part of it. I really do, because the opportunities are just so large. But of course, it swings in both directions, and that's why I've been focusing just on the real shorter term time frames to make some sense of it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's disturbing. Also, I must tell you, because I think even though you are working these markets and day trading in and out and using your analysis and hopefully you're making money, and I we've talked before, and you're making money doing this, et cetera, and you're very good at this. You got to admit that it's pretty spooky. I mean, these moves, these turns, these afternoon jolly fests of this market is a little bit disturbing.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that's a better word. That's a better word. That's a better word.
I couldn't imagine being an investor in somebody who's bought into this whole buy and hold and the blue chip marketing terms that Wall Street has sold. I mean, people have been let down by Wall Street in so many different ways that you really can't trust much of anything, which is what always brings me back to just the price action.
But what do you think? I mean, that's a good – I never really talked to you about this. So talk to me about your thesis on what buy and hold is all about. And also, you know, if we get a real big pop-up very quickly – now, mind you, I guess, we're in the round numbers – down, let's just use a round number, down about on the major indices, that is about 40% year to date, about, okay, 35, okay. 38, whatever exactly it is, okay, and even if you get a 10% upswing in a day or a week or a minute these days, I mean, we're nearly not talking about a lot of return. I mean, in order to get a full return on your money with the market right now, you'd have to get somewhere in the neighborhood of what, maybe 60 or 65% return to get back to square one if you were buy and hold?
Right, yeah. I mean, the last week, the S&P 500 made a 12-year low. It's I don't know what people, hold on that long, but there's nothing wrong with buy and hold. But buy and hold as long as the trend for which the time frame you're looking at is intact. So if you bought, Citigroup, let's say, 10 years ago. It had a great rally, in the early 90s and that sort of thing. But when these things break down, you have to listen to price action and hold only as long as the market tells you to do so. You have to listen to the message of the market.
But how does somebody, in layman's terms, how does somebody hear that? I'm not kidding, because that's not the easiest thing to do, right? Because there's a lot of jumps and moves, and it kind of usually, traditionally, happens over time, and it's almost kind of sneaky. Let's leave out today, tomorrow or this week or that kind of – I'm talking about when you're seeing this kind of, where's the point? Is it a moving average number? Is it a support number? Is it a – I mean, what – and these days, support seems to be buy numbers. I mean, they've taken the support line, which is this thing that we use in technical analysis to say, okay, here's kind of like where it looks like the buyers – the sellers have stopped selling and the buyers put some support in, and they've twisted it and almost taken it and instead of being support line, they're making it always seems to be a buy position these days. And I don't really understand, traditionally support was a line that we need to be very careful of, right? And it's not an actual buy position, not an automatic buy program decision position. But I think the last three times we hit support, we bounced pretty hard on the upside, right?
Three times, and then we broke through pretty hard about a week ago. A support level, a true support level, is really only known after the fact. You have to look at them as, here's a potential level. Here's an inflection point, a point in the market that's been viewed as important before. So when it reaches that level, what you want to do is, you know, magnify your analysis to a shorter-term time frame and look for the evidence that the buyers are actually gaining control. And when prices start moving away from that level of support, then you want to buy with the momentum and put your stop below it as protection. So if it reverses, that you're out pretty quickly. But if it continues to rally, then you want to look at the definition of trend, which is higher highs and higher lows, of course, and keep raising your stop up under those successive higher lows and let the market tell you when to get out rather than trying to come up with valuations or say it's going to retrace two-thirds or, you know, the Fibonacci levels. And I look at those all the time. They give us a potential area where that battleground might be fought next.
So right now, again, generally speaking, we've been in and we're going to talk about, let's just talk about the S&P, the Dow, the major indices for a moment. We've been in a general downtrend. I don't think there's any disagreement there. Are we in a turning point uptrend now, or is it classified differently because we are seeing such an exaggerated move down that we took a bounce, a dead cat bounce, or is it, you know, is this, what's the confirmation point? Do we need to see a combination of multiple days up and volume? What is the real thing we should be looking for now?
Well, I think that the obsession with finding the low is something that, you know, a lot of people are realizing that it's a fruitless pursuit. That you really, what markets really need to do to make a bottom is they need time to heal all these big wounds. There's going to be supply released at multiple levels on the way back up. If you look back at the S&P 500 in, you know, 2002, 2000, early 2003, when the market really started bottoming out, it started making slightly higher lows. Then we had the 50-day moving average flatten out, the 100-day moving average. The 100-day moving average came up, or I'm sorry, the 50 came up through the 100. The 200-day moving average flattened out. And when the 200-day moving average begins to rise and prices can hold above that for a week or two, then you have the hindsight to say it. Now it looks like the institutional buyers, the big money, are clearly net buyers of this market. And that's not going to occur, I don't think, for, you know, 6 to 12 months still. We've still got a lot of healing to do before I think you can really comfortably invest once again. But meanwhile, there's just been some dynamite rallies. I mean, these rallies that occur in 2 to 5 days are, you know, gains that would be terrific for a one-year period. You know, and we've seen 9 of them this year so far. It's just been...
So, but should people be disappointed that they're missing those rallies?
No, because there's been 10 bigger declines. You know, in a downtrend, the sum of the declines is always greater than the sum of the rallies. If you're not cut out to be a short-term trader, if you can put your emotions to the side, then you're going to get run right over each time it comes lower. We've had 9 rallies of 10% or more this year, but we've had 10 declines of more than 10%. So, the sum of the rallies is always greater than the sum of the declines. We need volatility to settle down. We need those longer-term moving averages to flatten out. We need to stop hearing people talking about picking the bottom, and it's going to take time. It's a long cleansing process typically.
One of the things that is, you know, talk about 200-day moving averages, and I want to focus on the idea of this, just this moving average concept for a second. So let's just say that 200-day moving average is obviously a 200-day of trading moving average, and obviously it takes all that. And what happens is you'll get more of a straight line than a very sharp up and down because it takes in consideration all of those periods, a long time. But what's interesting to me is the sharpness of the decline starting in October, particularly October, November. And does that, in your opinion, have any effect on the validity of trying to match the 200-day? Because, in effect, the 200-day is pretty far away from where we are now, right?
It's very far away, yes.
So if you wait to get to that point...
We can get some big rallies up to that. If you look back at 1929... the Dow Jones, you know, basically got cut in half and in 1929. Then it rallied, though, 52%, right up to the declining 200-day moving average. That was in about April of 1930. And from that point, actually from the bear market low, I'm sorry, the 1929 low of 195, the Dow Jones over the next 2.5 years actually lost another 80%. It went down to $40.56. It had a 52% rally from the 1929 lows right up to the declining 200-day moving average. Then we saw some.
When was that? What was the time period there? 29 till what?
I was say that again. The rally.
What we saw the first
October of 29 up till about May, late April, early May of 1930. We saw the Dow Jones go from 195 to 297. That's 49%.
You know, that's ringing a major, gigantic bell to me here. I mean, seriously, just for a moment. Do you know my friend Harry Dent?
The Roaring 2000, Harry Dent.
Do you know? Seriously, this something. It just struck me over head like a something very large, like a GM truck. You know, he's always talking about how in 2008 there's going to be a decline, but then we're going to see this gigantic rally back. He's been saying this for a long time, and then we're going to see this tremendous, you know, blowout in 2010, let's say. And I've always said to him, Harry, I don't understand. Why are we going to have this rise all of a sudden? If things are bad, they're bad. What's the story? And, you know, he says that if you look at all the indications and the cycles and blah, 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 all the good things that he tells us. And I'm thinking to myself, and this week in particular, wow, look at that market. You know, we've seen such a dramatic move and we saw, you know, umpteen trillion dollars get pushed into the market by the Fed, and I don't want to talk about how grotesque that whole discussion is. I wonder if it's possible that that's what was tried back in the 29, and then they just blew out everything out because of the, you know, pushing so much in. Do we have a recreation of what's going on here then to now? It's almost, if you're telling me if it is, it's in, I'm not you're saying it is, but kind of is an interesting parallel, don't you think?
It's tremendously interesting, and to go look back at those charts and read the historical accounts of what happened back then is really fascinating. There's, you know, these massive rallies, and people thought, you know, people think of, you know, the Great Depression and the crash is 1929, but again, from the 1929 lows, the market lost 80% of its value over the next 2.5 years. And if that's what we're in for, that is a very, very scary thought, obviously. But if you look at the chart going back to there, there were just some amazing trading opportunities. And as long as we have volume, there's going to be opportunity. And that's all that I'm really interested in for now, because that longer term, there's just so much economic uncertainty still that how can you forecast the end of this?
Mm-hmm. But also, I think we have to admit that the history doesn't always repeat itself when it comes to trading markets, right?
No, it doesn't repeat at all. It's Mark Twain says it rhymes. It doesn't, you know, history rhymes. It doesn't repeat. But there's, you know, similarities, and people are more alike than different, and they, you know, act to the same set of circumstances, and you know what tend to be predictable or repeatable patterns that we can use to, you know, formulate a plan, figure out what are the potential outcomes, and then just manage risk, number one.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue, this management of risk, because it seems to me that people are much more interested in catching this low, whatever that means exactly, than protecting themselves. You know, the portfolio that we manage, you know, we have a lot of hedging, and sometimes more than other times, and we like this kind of making money in every market. You remember a couple weeks back, we saw a lot of really bad days out there, right? You know, we saw a 4% day, a 5% day. I mean, just really ugly, ugly days. You know, we were up like 1.5%, 1% each of those days. And through all of this, we're up about 1.5%, 1%, you know, 0.75% each and every day also here. So the beautiful thing is that if you spread out the, you know, the lows, you know, from a couple of weeks ago to now, I mean, we probably made back all those problems we had, whereas we just kept on kind of smoothly moving without any gigantic volatility and managing the risk. We may have gotten to the same place in this period of time because of the excessive move up, but we didn't have that volatility. And I, you know, on one hand, I'd love to catch all of that movement, but on the other hand, you know, the aggravation factor is just too great.
It's way too great. There's, I mean, you can look back at any other time than maybe a month ago, or, you know, look back 3 months ago, and it, you know, a lot of people are looking to break even from 3 months ago, 4 months ago, 5 months ago. When do you stop? You have to do what you're doing, which is to be proactive about it. You can't just sit back and let the market take care of itself, because again, it's just going to need a lot of time. And you know, I think that people are making a lot of the same mistakes right now in a lot of the companies trying to pick the bottom and say, well, it's a good company, they've got good products, it's good management, that they were, you know, after the bubble burst in 2000. And they, you know, you look at charts of Cisco or Intel, those were the names that everyone was in love with, Cisco Systems. And Cisco could do no wrong back then, and Sun Microsystems. And look how far off those highs we still are today. 70, 80, 90% off the highs in all those companies. Who has the time for that?
Yeah, the old technology, the new financials.
Exactly. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of time, and a lot of the companies, just like we're seeing in the financials today, or what we saw in the technology stocks, is a lot of the ones that were trading, you know, the most aggressively to the upside. Some of those .com companies that don't even exist, and a lot of these banks, we're losing them, you know, at a very steady pace here this year.
Now, and the troubling thing is the rallies into really bad news. That is troubling, because it seems to me that the rallies, and this is back on the fundamental side for one second, because I blend it all together. And again, I'm dealing with client money. And it's a little bit, you know, kind of we try to a lot more risk management, not only day trading. But so what I think is interesting is that we have this cloak and dagger. I wrote about it in the MSN Strategy Lab this week. This kind of, I call them, you know, Hank, give him a trillion, Paulson. You know, and this whole idea, this late night Sunday and weekend cloak and dagger kind of, you know, very hush hush and secretive bailout things that go on. And you know, we're still on the heels of daily bailouts. It was a couple of them in a row for here. We had a huge reduction in China. We had a European bailout, which had a six billion euro bailout of the auto industry, thus pushing GM up here, and then, you know, really igniting a interesting rally here this week. What happens when we stop with all the pushes, and we have to really see that, like, durable goods came out and unemployment would be coming out, and all these would be coming out? There's going to be an end to the bailouts. Are people setting themselves up, generally speaking, for a, well, let's call it a bear trap here, potentially?
Well, it's not going to, you know, it's not going to affect Hank Paulson, because he's going to be out of a job in 6 weeks. His suitcase is packed, so we can't really hang on what he's doing necessarily. But you know, we're still in a downtrend, and the path of least resistance is lower. The market remains guilty till proven innocent. You need that time to heal. So I think that you have to be suspicious of all rally attempts, and be like you are with your, you know, taking your 1%, your 3% here and there, moving to sidelines, then getting short, you know, as the market rolls back over, moving to the sidelines again. It's an active and it's an active style that's going to win in this market. Yeah. And you know, the buy and hold just doesn't work in this environment.
So let me, by the way, I'm going to post you have a great graphic that I'm just staring at. And it gives all these different data points for the last, I don't know, let's see, 1 year time period, and all the various market decline periods, you know, like 10 days for during this period, and the high and low, and the ups, and also marking some very important areas. So kind of, if you're listening, and when you're listening to this, maybe you go to the site, grab this particular image, and I think that will kind of tell a good story. And we'll update it to the latest one, Brian, so we can get it out to the...
Yeah, and I've, you know, I've got that 1929 to 1932.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Similarly.
Can you, here's something. Could you, have you superimposed it?
I have not. I'm not, you know, let me see if I can do something like that.
Just for fun. Just for, I mean, we're not going to suggest that it's really that, but...
Brush out my Photoshop skills.
Ooh, exciting. let me, talking about this whole idea of, you know, buy and hold, And, you know, the whole concept of, you know, I was talking to somebody today, and they were telling me that they, you know, and it's not just him. It's me too. It's everybody. We have been so indoctrinated for so long about this buy and hold strategy. And here's what my take is. The problem is that when you commit to a buy and hold strategy, you can't sell. You commit to the fact that you're buying a good company and you're pretty much going to marry it and stay with it forever. There's no divorce really as an option until it's the wrong time, usually. You're so
right.
Fed up.
And what's a good company? We really don't know what a good company is because they don't tell us the truth.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. That's a problem. Well, you don't consider
it's a little problem.
You don't consider, well, the financials have a different truth than the non-truths to begin with. But you don't consider that Vikram Pandit told us that there was a $50 billion problem, and then we woke up to a $300 billion problem. Just a little off.
Or the Lehman Brothers, chairman stared straight into the camera and said, "We don't have a liquidity issue," and 3 days later, the company was gone.
You know what? If I'm not mistaken, although Lehman was different, but didn't we have a gigantic rally after the Bear Stearns? When was that? We just saw a big rally after that, didn't we?
Right, the Bear Stearns low. I remember that. That was probably about 20 or 30% ago. We label all these lows, and we can label them as an important event, such as, you know, the election high that we saw. The market sold off after the election on November 4th, and you know that's a significant high now. That's one that's going to be measured against if we can retake the election high type of thing. But the Bear Stearns low, I think that was way back in, what was that, July or something?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. I think it was in the summer here. But what's interesting is we rallied again. The sharpness of the movement then was not at all what it is now. But we rallied again, which, again, it's this kind of weird backward mentality, I guess, somehow, where the masses, or maybe I don't know who it is that's kind of pushing things at this point. But, you know, when you get this bad news, it's almost like it's over. You know, conceptually, the idea that, the market hates to be confused and the idea of uncertainty. But yet when we have certainty, no matter how bad it is, we get this initial pop, and then we get the realization, kind of the hangover sets in, I suppose.
Right.
And then, we get the movement down.
I think the psychology of those types of rallies is, the people who've been pressing really heavily to the short side start thinking, all right, now that everyone at home basically knows what we've been, betting for, is the market is a discounting mechanism, it's anticipating the future. Now when everyone knows this, what we'll do is we'll go in and try and buy the stocks from the public as they dump them on this bad news, and they go in with their bids. Other people start to see, hey, there's bidders in here, and it's just the buying feeds on itself. I'm sure you've seen that cartoon that people pass around that says something like, buy, would you say sell? And then they all go to sell.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The market seems to operate sometimes, is there's just these changes occur, almost on a dime, and we, 2-3 day rallies of 10-15-20%, 2-3 day declines of, October 14th through the 16th, in 3 days we lost 18% on the S&P 500, and then on the 20th to the 27th, 6 days, another 6 days, another 15% decline, but it's clearly picked up since September. This fourth quarter, I think, is going to go down as seemingly one of the worst ever.
I'm just fascinated and very, I tell you something, I've been pulling my hair out a lot because it's very hard. I want an explanation, which I'm not getting, and I don't think there is one, or maybe there is, maybe you can give it to me. What is this whole end of day thing going on? What is this 3 o'clock rally? It's ridiculous. It's almost it's like there's somebody pushes a button.
Yeah, a lot of buttons maybe, what it is anyone's guess, but the important thing is, from a trading standpoint, is to recognize it's there, be ready for it, because some of those opportunities is from a trading standpoint can really be fantastic, or if you're positioned wrongly, you're going to get hurt very badly, very quickly. So that's,
Brian, what's going to happen is everybody's going to start thinking that's what happens. and they're going to turn it one day, right?
Always, yeah. As soon as everyone knows, as soon as people recognize it, you know, the market likes to make it as hard on people as possible.
Yeah, I can just imagine, you know, you have this, you know, the 3 o'clock rally's coming. That's what happens at 3 o'clock. We get a 200-point spurt. And, you know, everybody starts looking at that and buying into it, which, you know, who knows when that actually happens. Who knows who starts it, where it starts from. But is there some other explanation, though? Come on, there's got to be something else going on. There's got to be.
Yeah, there's got to be, but you're not going to get it from me. And the thing to recognize is that, you know, even if this pattern fails, well, then there's an opportunity in there, because if everyone's expecting this pattern to fulfill itself and then it goes the other way, then you're going to have a lot of people positioned incorrectly who are going to run to the exits real quick. So if you can position yourself ahead of that and try and determine all potential outcomes, cut your losses quickly, then catch the other side reversal of it, there's a huge opportunity from a trading standpoint there as well.
Well, I've knock wood, not on an intraday, but I have been able to ride this movement, the kind of the swells, and the day that 2 days after the election when it just failed, remember that?
Yeah.
The next week, that Monday. Well, we went hard to short on that Friday, which at the moment we did it, it looked a little wrong because the trend was there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it paid off in spades. I mean, it was ugly after that. And we didn't lose any money. And then we last Thursday, a week ago, we right before the rally, took down some of the shorts, took down all of our positions in the mutual fund shorts. We shorted Legg Mason, Franklin Resources, and we shorted T. Rowe Price Associates, made about 20% on each, and then closed those down, and then added some of the China stocks, brought back our position in DIG that we just sold at 38, bought it back at 22 and 24. And 25, somewhere around there. And, you know, kind of brought the long positions back in, ACM, ADM, a few of these guys. And it was a beautiful turn again, right? I mean, smooth, because we still have some shorts in the portfolio, so we don't get this kind of real, real big ups or real big downs. This is smooth kind of returns and leaning it right or leaning it left, you know? But it is concerning that, you know, how do you, there's a lot of things that we read, and in terms of when I say read, I mean the indicators, right?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things that you do, but you know, it's very spooky that you can get that wrong, and it can really hurt.
It is, and that's where your experience comes into play, and you know, being there and feeling the market movements and looking at the panic out there and the elation after the election that things were going to change magically because we have a change in administration, which where did the market come from before that? You know, the rally that occurred before the election was 14.5% in just 3 days.
Yeah.
And if you go back to October 10th to the October 20th high, you had a rally from 83.5 in the SPY up to 99. So it went 16 points.
Hmm.
25% or so.
No, it's pretty scary. One of the things that made me turn the portfolio last time from a long position to a short position was a reading on the volume. I saw that the rallies were done on extremely low volume. Well, comparative relative volume, I should say, right? Looking at the NYSE volume, NASDAQ volume. So last week we saw a few days of actually increasing volume as we saw the beginnings of this rally or this whatever you want to call this
bounce.
Happen. And then all of a sudden, the volume seemed to have really not only faded off, but I think the NYSE volume on last Thursday, as a matter of fact, one of the days that I was really interested in because that was the last full day before the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yep.
And that big move at the end of the day was, I think the volume was, I had to go way back to August for the last time the volume was so low on the NYSE. And that's troubling. Because that means there's not a lot of participation, right?
It is. It means that the confidence is waning, that the shorts aren't as aggressive about covering, and that we're running out of buyers up here. And, you know, after the market has traveled that far that fast, that it means that it's running on vapors, basically. It's not a reason to sell short yet. You want to wait for price evidence first, because only price pays, and, you know, you can fight it all the way up on light volume, and it can It can sustain on light volume as long as there's an absence of supply. But once that supply comes back in, and you see that, you know, the shorter term time frames are starting to turn more neutral, and then you get those little lower highs and lower lows on your, you know, 2 and 3 day charts, then you have to take that very seriously, cash out your longs, and you know, consider getting short again.
But do you think that that a lot of the reason for the volatility is because that I look at it like an after hours market, right? In an after hours market, you have very big volatility because there's not as many players.
Right.
And right now, we just don't have as many players.
Yeah, I would have. No one knows the numbers, but I'm sure we've washed a lot of people out of this market. You see these big hedge fund failures, and that's the so-called smart money. You know, there's countless victims in this market that eventually we're going to run into an even lower volume environment, and that's when the market starts to take on that neutral look to it, and that's when the base building begins. We have to complete the emotional cycle where people just stop believing in these rallies. And as long as people keep believing that each one of these rallies was the bottom, it most likely wasn't. When you stop hearing about it, you know, the first thing on the nightly, you know, the nightly news broadcast, you know, national news broadcast, when they stop talking about the big rally, then maybe it's one that can stick, because that's one that, you know, the ones that sustain usually occur from a period of disbelief.
It would be hard to imagine, not impossible, but hard to imagine a dramatic return back to some really big number in a quick fashion from where we are. Would you agree, from the damage that we've seen, would you agree with that? I mean, I'm looking at this chart right here, my friend, that you sent me. It is choppy as can be. It is ugly.
It's super choppy.
When I look at a chart all the time, I'm always the first thing I catch my eye is, you know, the choppiness factor, right? You know, the gaps. Did you do the same thing?
Not you.
Yeah, it's terrible.
George Soros is the one who said volatility peaks at turning points and diminishes with trend. Well, the last month and a half has really seen an amazing increase in volatility. So maybe that's a sign that we're going to get a bigger bounce. You know, maybe we'll get a bounce up towards that 200-day moving average. That's about 35-40% away from where we are. But even that won't correct the long-term bear market that we're still in. It would most likely, you know, fail near there. But obviously, it's just tremendous rally opportunity from the long side to make profits and manage risk the whole way.
That would be a huge rally.
It would get all the headlines. It would, unfortunately, it would bring in more sidelined money that would ultimately most likely become, you know, yet another victim of a longer-term bear market brought on by severe problems with our economic system.
So let's just recap something here. So tell me once again exactly right now, or maybe not exactly, but what is the – so if we're I don't know if we're in a long-term uptrend. We're just in a 3-day uptrend, for goodness sakes, or whatever,
right.
But which I don't know if qualifies. But we have a 3-day uptrend, and, you know, what am I going to look for to show me that it's not? I'm going to look for a break in that pattern. I'm going to look at volume diminishing.
You're going to look at volume diminishing as it has, meaning that we're running out of aggressive buying here, whether that's short covering or if it's sideline money coming back in. And we're reaching these levels where the people that did buy on those lows, like you did a week and a half ago Thursday, that you start thinking, well, I've seen this pattern before, meaning these rallies have failed. So, the volatility creates more volatility as you start thinking, well, I'm going to lock in my gains. Other people start to do that. And then, you know, the shorts come back in aggressively. So for a true bottom to form, then we just need a lot of time, unfortunately. It's just not going to happen quickly.
Yeah. So first of all, let me just pimp you for a second here. Last few weeks in particular, as I usually do, but really more in the last few weeks, I have found a lot of good information and frankly some comfort in your recaps on a daily basis over at alphatrends.net, because, you know, when I'm seeing all this craziness during the day and, you know, involved in, you know, if you come to my office, I have like 1, 2, 3, 4, I have 8 screens surrounding me right now. Okay, right. You know, that's in, just in my office. And the swivel chair being the beauty behind the power of what I do, able right. to swivel around here. But I think that the really cool thing about how you, 7 or 8 minute videos you put up, I think that what's really neat is that as you watch them, the dailies, you could really kind of get a flavor for the trend and for where things are happening and why things are happening and, you know, what are the support levels? What are the bounce levels? I obviously, as you know, bring in a lot of, I bring in three things, right? So I bring in a quantitative and a fundamental and technical, which is kind of against the whole idea of just technical analysis and trading. But, you know, right. I like to see the big picture before I do anything. It just gives me more a feeling of satisfaction that I understand what's happening,
yep.
Which is, you know, for me. But so I encourage everybody to go definitely, I mean, without a question, you know, get the RSS feed or subscribe to it in iTunes, I think in iTunes, and or just go to YouTube, number one, I think the number one financial video fella on YouTube, and at alphatrends.net. But on a daily basis, you know, versus a weekly basis, what chart interval or what chart intervals do you like, and what indicators do you think are even reasonably, you know, something that you could follow, use, and feel comfortable with?
Well, first of all, let me talk about what tools I think should be on there. If you look at my charts on those videos, you'll see that I look at price, volume, and moving averages. Then I draw in trend lines. I look at some Fibonacci and sometimes intraday some pivot analysis. But beyond that, I don't think that it's necessary to have your trading screen and your charts cluttered with all of these various oscillators and indicators. And there's a lot of real good ones out there, and I don't mean to criticize any of them, but the real important thing to recognize is the only thing that pays is price, and a lot of people misuse these indicators that are meant to tell you, well, it's oversold. Oversold doesn't mean buy. It means it's oversold versus historical readings and that sort of thing, so you want to look for evidence on the price pattern to confirm that it might be time to be a buyer. People will just look at oversold and blindly buy, which is, you know, is foolish, because you don't buy an oscillator, you don't buy an indicator, you're buying a stock, you're buying price, and only price will pay you. So regardless of the time frame, I like to keep my analysis very very focused on, you know, price, the volume, because it tells me the intensity of the move. But even there, I want to discount it. I want to be aware that the market rallied on light volume, so it's running on vapors, and that makes it more susceptible to a pullback. So I want to tighten my stops if I have long positions. Doesn't mean I want to reverse and go short until the evidence is there on that short-term time frame of lower highs and lower lows. So, you know, basically keep it as simple as possible first, I think.
So you're not using like, you know, everybody's, you know, stochastics and MACD. I tell you, MACD is probably one I hear all the time, right? The moving average convergence divergence indicator with the histograms, which a lot of trading systems are designed on. Interesting, because I think a lot of times you can see a pattern there, but it's not 100% accurate by any reason. And I think also the technical analysis is misused a lot of times, Ryan, in that people use it as a crutch. Tell me what you think about this, right? So you don't have to do a lot of research. You could just look at price pattern, of course, but, you know, assume that a support level is always support level, or a moving average break means this, or a MACD means that, or a stochastic means that. I think a lot of people utilize it and use it as a crutch, as kind of, you know, saying, I get a signal, I'll use it, and hopefully it will work, versus some of the research that goes behind it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely would. I think it's, you know, a chart or a moving average or a Fibonacci or a trend line by themselves is useless as a PE ratio by itself. You don't just go out and say, okay, I'm going to buy all stocks when they hit a 15 times PE. You know, it's just one piece of information that can lead you to, here are the things that I want to analyze a little bit more closely now, because it's hit this moving average, or because the volume has done that, or even because the PE is 15 or whatever the number it is, or the dividend yield is who knows what. That's just something that leads you to the analysis to take a deeper look. And in technical analysis, it means take a deeper look on the next time frame lower, and then from there go to another time frame lower and put it under a microscope. Basically, when you're moving from a longer term time frame to an intermediate to a short term to a micro time frame. You're just putting, you know, your lens a little bit closer to the action so that you can see that battleground being fought and look for the evidence that, yeah, we're at that moving average, the volume tailed off, and now it looks like the stock is breaking to a lower low. Now I'm going to sell short, but if I'm wrong, that lower high, if it gets above that, then I'm going to cover my position, take a small loss, and reassess. That's really the value of technical analysis. It allows you to objectively plan your trades based on the price action. Who's in control? Is it the buyers or the sellers? And there's trends within trends. You know, we've had these, you know, 10, 15, 20% rallies throughout the, you know, 2000, but basically we're still down, as you said, about 40%. So what time frame is appropriate for your own personal psychology? How closely can you look at the market? Do you have the time to do it? And a lot of people don't, but it's as they say, it's an art. It's not a science. You can't
That's exactly right.
Cups
exactly
and handles right. And ascending triangles and all that sort of stuff.
I like a couple of the handle, actually. I do like that from a fund. I like a couple of the handle when it's when you utilize it for a incorporated my process with a fundamental backing. You know, in other words, so I can get where things are going on a longer term basis, where the supports are and all that, different than what I would talked about on a trading basis.
Right. And a cup and handle, if you think about it, right, rather than just recognizing a cup and handle the way a lot of people have trained themselves to do, recognize the psychology of what's happening there.
Right. Exactly the point, yeah.
We've got the stock that's made a higher low. We also see that it tells us that the buyers are more aggressive price wise. If you think about a stock, let's say it has resistance at $20, it pulls back to $15, it comes back up to that $20 level. It gets rejected there, so there's resistance. Then it pulls back down to $18 a share and comes back up to that $20 level. And let's say the first rejection at $20 was 6 weeks. The second time was 4 weeks, which on the handle, it's going to take less time to form. What that tells us is that the buyers are more aggressive price-wise. They didn't wait for pull back to the 15 level before they took control. Instead, they took back control at 17 or 18, I forget what I just said. And rather than coming back 6 weeks later, they came back 4 weeks later. So they're showing that they're getting more aggressive
and hopefully some more, yeah, and more volume. That point, it's more volume, yeah.
Right, and what's happening at that $20 level? Well, there was a seller or a group of sellers there, and eventually, you know, the more times that resistance is tested, the more likely it is they're going to run out of supply, the buyers are going to take control, and then the stock breaks out through there. So the psychology of the pattern and recognizing the fact that we're removing supply, the buyers are showing that they're getting more aggressive price-wise and time-wise, sets up a powerful combination, and then you go in, you look at it, and you know, justify it with a fundamental position, but then manage risk because patterns fail. You know, a lot of times patterns fail.
There's only one problem with the cup and handle right now.
They're basically all upside down.
You can't get it. You can't find it. In order to get that, you're going to have to be extraordinarily patient right now. Well, let me say this: there are some out there, but generally speaking, there's no cup with handles out there. I mean, you have a broken cup with only the left side, and to get to the right side, you can't really have these, in my opinion, these extraordinarily jagged. I like to see a little bit more of a bull. These big ups and downs and all that spook me,
right?
And I'll trade them, but I won't. Yeah,
go. I'm sorry.
I'll trade them, but I'm not going to buy and hold them.
Right. The cup and handles that are forming in this market are forming over the course of 4 and 5 days on the 10-minute time frames. And they're played out in 2 to 3 days on the upside if they hold.
Right. Now, that's not a healthy cup and handle.
No, they're not on the daily time frames. These are short, much shorter-term time frames that we're looking at.
Right. So, by the way, because of what's gone on and because of the fact that I can't find that pattern, as an example, it could be another pattern, you know, one of the things that's happened is it steered me away from many stocks. The natural progression where I will find a position, then I'll go and I will – the next stage, if you will, I'm going to do my fundamental analysis. Then I'm going to go find, if I can find a price that I'm going to buy it at, it's failed so many times that it's been frustrating. Now, I didn't force it. I haven't forced it all year. And what's naturally happened, that's what the beauty about, if I can, you know, give myself a little bit of a pimp here myself, but the beauty of how we invest and this whole thing that we've, you know, done in my book, The Disciplined Investor, is that, you know, you get this three-part process. Now, you may do it all in one just because this technical is pretty much where it all broke down for me anyway. But, you know, the fact is it led me only to a few positions and not taking a heavy position, whereas we essentially, you know, didn't lose any money during the, I mean, what was the rough time? From the summit to now was the roughest time, right?
Definitely.
You know, we didn't lose, as a matter of fact, we're up, we're at an all-time high right now in our portfolios. So,
and that's a function of experience, I think, a lot of it, you know, and because you've been doing it, you've seen, and you recognize that these patterns aren't etched in stone. They're a guideline to, you know, potential scenarios in the market and really nothing more.
Right, exactly. So let me just mention that your book is a wonderful book. It can only be bought through your website, Technical Analysis Using Multiple Time Frames. And I think I mentioned this before. What I think was so cool about it is it's in color. Usually yeah. Black and white, and it really shows what you really want to see. And it's just a great book, a great reference. I've read some great reviews. By the way, you should be really, really proud of what you did there. That's a fantastic guide to technical analysis versus those voluminous kind of, you know, coffee table stack things that never get opened. This is one of those books that you can actually use. So I encourage everybody to go over to Brian's site, which is alphatrends.net. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. And I'm going to put a, as I said, the chart. We'll try to get both charts from the crash as well as the most recent that you can take a look at some of these price points that he's pointing out. And I think that you'd be very pleased if you, as one of the tools that you use, folks, is Brian Shannon, because his videos are free, which is pretty cool, and get his book to go along with it. I think you'd be very much a better investor if you did so. So, Mr. Shannon, thanks for joining me today.
Andrew, thanks for all the kind words, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, me too. Always great to talk with you. I learned so much. It's fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. Again, this is episode 85. Spread the news. Tell a friend or two about this. Make sure you do sign up for Twitter. If you don't know what Twitter is, go check it out. You'll get instant information from me as soon as we post it on our site, or if we just send out an alert over at Andrew Horowitz. That's the Twitter feed. And if you have any questions, please just visit the site. There's plenty there for you, plenty of ways to hopefully protect yourself as well as profit. We have a lot of things coming up, so make sure you stay subscribed to this feed, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We got some real surprises in store for you for the end of the year. But for now, we're going to close it up and say thank you so much for listening. It's Andrew Horowitz again, signing off for this week. Be safe, be well, make some profits. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.